Have you been listening to the current remarkable series of the Boyer Lectures on RN?
In 2017, I was sitting in the audience of a lecture hall listening to a talk by one of my PhD supervisors, the very famous Professor Daniel Pauly from the University of British Columbia. At the end, someone in the audience asked, "Do we know what caused all the big fish to disappear from the Caribbean?" I'll never forget his reply. He just shrugged. Nothing remarkable or noteworthy happened. They simply got eaten.
Yes, we ate them all. Boyer lecturer Andrew Forrest, doing his PhD in marine science. A brilliant move for a top business leader, don't you think? And here is Daniel Pauly himself on the future of fish in this international decade of the oceans.
This is 90% of all big fish, tuna, cod and groupers. The problem is the big fish that live longer, and they are gone almost everywhere. And while in some region of the world, in Europe a little bit, in the US, there has been a trend toward rebuilding the stocks, reducing the effort, or at least not letting it increase as it was happening before. And the result of this is that the situation you will read in newspaper is not as bad as before.
Now, the point about big fish, many fishers have always gone for the bigger fish and thrown the little fish back. But it turns out that the big fish are the ones which are most fertile and produce the most offspring. So if you catch big fish, you're depleting the next generation. Is that true?
That is exactly what is happening. The depletion of big fish affect that species very much. These are the more threatened. If you think of groupers, or big bluefin tuna, or sturgeons that are almost extinct everywhere. So the fish that get big and that need a long time to reach maturity, they are the ones that are most under pressure. And then within the species, the fish that are big are pushed to the brink because fisheries are selective for big fish usually. There are two kinds of big fish and both of them are impacted. Smaller fish are also impacted because, for example, in coral reef, the habitat is what is destroyed. And freshwater fish are in trouble also because of pollution. So while there are relatively positive development in fisheries management in some countries, in some region, overall, there is a big problem, especially because the distant water fisheries have become very important.
Yes, indeed. These are other nations who are plundering the fish stocks of their neighbours or even ones further away. So it's the rich countries with big fleets who've got mobility versus the smaller countries. What is the problem and how would you like it tackled?
So that is very true. And you described the situation quite well. Before, it was mainly European countries such as Spain and France and Italy and Greece that were fishing outside of their own water. For example, there is this traditional fishing for cod that started in the 16th century in New England and eastern Canada by France, Britain and Spain. It has a long tradition, distant water fishing. But after World War II, Japan began covering the world. Now, in 1982, something very important happened, which is the law of the sea, which made it possible for countries to say, stop here, 200 miles, don't belong to us, but we manage this 200-mile zone, so-called exclusive economic zone. And that made it possible for the coastal countries to regulate how much fishing was happening in their water and to get a fee from countries that were fishing in them. Unfortunately, politically weak country, economically weak country, have to accept almost any offer that they get because the government doesn't really have a tax base from the local population and gets the support that they need by really selling out the country. And this is very strong in African waters, which are very rich, but also occurs in South America and in Asian countries.
Yes, may I ask, what about Southeast Asia? Because Southeast Asia is very important.
One Southeast Asian country, Thailand, has been able to become a distant water fishing nation. And in fact, Thailand had an enormous fleet that went all the way to East Africa. until the 90s when it had to repatriate that because of the cost of fuel. And now, since 85, a new player has come into the picture. That is China. At first, China was not equipped to fish in foreign countries. They don't fish far offshore. But now, China has grown enormously in its economic power, and it has the biggest fleet in the world, and by far has become the major player in distant water fishing.
Professor Daniel Pauly from Marine Science, University of British Columbia in Vancouver. And here again is his student, Twiggy Forrest.
Perhaps all of these problems seem very far away to you. Maybe you're thinking, illegal fishing is sad, but what does it have to do with me? But guess what? Australia imports around 70% of the seafood it eats, and most of that comes from countries like Vietnam and Thailand, where illegal fishing and modern slavery are rife. For a nation girt by sea, with the third largest exclusive economic zone in the world, it's a pretty embarrassing state of affairs. While we love to brag about where our local seafood comes from, oysters from Coffin Bay, blue swimmer crabs from Mandra, and hold our own fisheries to the highest standards, we're quite happy to throw those standards out the window when it comes to the canned tuna or the ready-to-eat prawns we import. In fact, Australia is currently one of the most backward of the developed countries in the world when it comes to the laxness of our own import laws. The EU and the US are leaders in this space, but not us. Even Japan, the longtime wild child of the seafood industry, is taking action. But without import laws, how do we stop illegal seafood from ending up on our plates? We need to make sure that little children or adults like Tenyo Win, a Burmese migrant enslaved by a Thai factory, didn't peel our prawns. Often these children are woken up at 2 a.m., made to stand with aching hands in icy water for 16 hours a day, captured if they try to escape, and kids so small they have to stand on stools to reach the prawns. Is this an Australia we're proud of? We need an import law that rejects illegal seafood products at our border, and we need to clearly label what we do import. What species is it? Where was it caught or farmed? Is it slavery free? Right now, most of our imported seafood is basically anonymous, and frankly, we should be ashamed of ourselves.
Dr. Andrew Forrest from his second Boyer lecture on RN, a top Australian businessman confronts the science. Do look up the entire Boyer lecture series. They're strong stuff.